Earlier, Bill, you and I were talking about Wilt Chamberlain, and you have dedicated a part of your new book to Wilt, and you were talking about Wilt and how often you two talked over the years. What is it that you remember about those conversations between the two of you on a personal as well as a professional level?
He'd call me Felton, and I'd call him Norman. Those are the middle names that our mothers put on us.
that only good friends can use.
Right. And so we used to talk about a variety of things because he was interested in the world that he lived in. And I never forget one night he called and left a message, and it was urgent. And he was I could tell he was agitated. So I called him back, and I, what? You know, and he says, "Do you believe this crap? What? Sports Illustrated had done a cover and asked the question, was Dennis Rodman the greatest rebounder ever? And I've never heard him so incensed. Because, you know, his best rebounder game was against me. He got 55 rebounds. And my best rebounder game was against Syracuse, where I got 51. So that we're the only two guys to go into the 50s in rebounds in a single game. And for the regular season and playoffs, he averaged 22.9, and I averaged 22.5. And so that's really close. And we should talk about he didn't feel he was ever accurately portrayed, you know. And so he was going to do a movie about Wilt, and he says the only way it's going to be accurate is he'd do it himself. Mm-hmm. Which that's been the way I've operated most of my life, is that you probably figure I don't do very many interviews.
No, you don't.
And unfortunately for you, I happen to like you.
I'm cursed, aren't I?
But you know that I just and one of the reasons I never did interviews, and still don't do that many, is that most interviewers, the questions they ask are not questions that I ask. And so basically you end up filling in blank spaces for someone else's agenda. And I always figure that if I want to say something, it's best for me to make a statement. For example, when Will died, I had over 60 requests for interviews the next day. But my agent said, "Do you want to do anything?" I said, "No." What I did was I took some time and I wrote a little short thing for Time Magazine about Wilt and our friendship. You know, and because I seriously miss him. It's a part of my life, a definite part of my career, that the battles that we had. And someone says, "Well, you really beat Chamberlain, didn't you?" I said, "No." I said, "First of all, we beat everybody." I mean, we beat everybody in that... And we won games against them. I said, but there were a lot of nights when he was up around 50 points in the games against us. And because I never, ever thought, it was never even a concept to stop him. Because if I were to say, okay, I'm going to stop him, then I was doomed to failure. And enough failures can frustrate you. What I was dedicated to was winning every game that we played. And to discipline myself, since I was in the league first, and we were winning championships, when he came in the league, I disciplined myself not to change my focus. You know, he's averaging 35 points, 37 points a game his first year, and I'm averaging about 15. I wasn't going to go out and say, okay, you know, I'm going to show who's best. I'm going to average 30 points a game. I could have done that. But we wouldn't have won very many championships.
And you understood who you were and what you could do, and you didn't allow somebody else to change you.
Right. So I just said, well, now this is what I do for this team. All I'm going to do is the same thing, maybe better. I'm going to find ways to do what I do better. And that's but the discipline is that I would not move away from the way I was playing because I knew that that was, for me, my body and my mind, this was the best way for me to play.
Bill, one of the things I've always respected about you is your consistency. I mean, from the moment I've known you up to this very moment, you've always been consistent in your thoughts and your actions. A lot of people didn't understand why you wouldn't sign autographs, and I've been asked on this program a number of times about it as well, and I said, I'll tell you a story, again, you and I talking, and you said to me, the reason why I don't sign autographs was because I don't think a man's value is his name on a piece of paper, a direct quote from you. And I know that a lot of people, I had a friend of mine in Seattle who said, you know, I wanted Bill's autograph very badly, so I donated to a charity that he was involved in with the belief that he'd have to endorse the check on the back so that I'd get the autograph. But that was the reasoning you gave me. Can you explain a little bit further what your thoughts were about autographs?
Well, first of all, I'll say that starting when my days at USF, I was never, ever comfortable doing that. Because it created an illusion that we had made contact when we really hadn't. And as I became increasingly uncomfortable with it, I made a conscious decision. I said, well, you know, this is something I have to deal with on a daily basis. And I don't like having to do this. So I'm not going to do this anymore. And I just said, well, this is a decision I made. And people have asked me, but how about pressure? No, there's never been any pressure on me.
You didn't allow that.
No.
You never allowed that. No matter what anybody said or the way they were going to react, that was their problem. It was not going to be Bill Russell's problem.
Right. And then, you see, because a guy came to me and says, would you sign an autograph? I said, I don't sign autographs. He says, well, you won't sign an autograph for me? I said, young man, I'd like to, just for a brief moment, I want to tell you something. I said that I don't sign autographs. And you asked me, won't you sign? That's two different words. Want is a personal thing, you and me. Don't is a matter of policy. Now, my policy is, I don't want to do this, so I don't do this. That's not an attack on you. It's just, you know, it's
personal preference.
It's just personal preference. You see, because in living in a society, all of us have unique experiences. And you decide what you should do in your life. You see, because the book, one of the things I say in the book is that on airplanes, when you get on an airplane and they start giving you the safety program, one of the things they say to you is, if you have a child or a person that's disabled, when the oxygen mask come down, you put it on yourself first and then on the child. In other words, if you don't take care of yourself first, you won't be able to help the child. In the same way is that if I don't take care of myself and I cannot take care of my family or my friends or anyone else. And so I have to be, as much as I can, be at peace with myself. And the things that takes me to be at peace with myself, I never think of it as an attack on someone or being rude to someone or anything like that.
Bill, I had a chance to talk to Joe Morgan, and one of the things that we talked about was your coaching career and how you felt about coaching guys that didn't really live up to your standard of play. I want you to hear what Joe had to say.
And therein, he told me about guys coming to Seattle with their briefcases, coming in with telephones over here, and where he's trying to run a play, and they're worried about their stocks and other things. So, again, when he played And when I played, all there was baseball. That was your concentration. You gave 100% concentration on the game itself that particular day, and you worried about the next day and so forth and so on. So Bill would have probably had a little more of a problem than even myself, because Bill was really something. He worked at defense, right? And most people don't want to work on defense. All you want to do is shoot the ball. You know, it's like hitters. They all want to hit. No one wants to catch the ground ball. No one wants to stand out there and catch 100 ground balls in the hot sun, but that's part of the game.
One of the things that I found interesting, the excellence in which you played as a player individually, the excellence that the Celtics played collectively, probably made it hard for you to accept people who weren't willing to play at the same level of commitment. You and I talked about that up in Seattle. You made that comment to me about all the different briefcases and the telephones and everything.
But I tell you what I think I did in Seattle. I think I changed the culture of that team. When I first went there, that was a difficult situation.
They were in total disarray. That's an understatement, Bill.
And but what I did, I'm kind of proud of what I did in Seattle. I'll tell you why. You were there, so you'll know what I'm talking about. When I signed a contract with Sam Schulman, the year before, they won 26 games. Okay. They averaged 4,600 people per game. They had sold 350 season tickets. I refused to sign the number one draft pick. And the team was not accepted in the city of Seattle. Second year I was there, an official team pitcher, was with a Boeing 747. And I was reaching out to the business community to say, hey, we're in town, and you're in town, and you're successful, and we're going to be successful. And we want to invite you to our games. The fact that they had 65,000 people working there.
Smart move.
Okay. Then, so my first year there, we won 36 games with the same team. We improved by 10 games. Second year there, we made the playoffs for the first time in the history of the franchise. Okay. And my third year, I changed television stations. You were there, you know.
Oh, I was part of that.
Okay. And the reason I changed television stations, see, I did that. Sam gave me control of the franchise. The reason I changed stations was I lived on the east side. I could not get Sonic Games. I couldn't get that station because that was before cable. And I couldn't get that station.
Darn, I thought it was because I was there and you wanted me to be the play-by-play guy.
And and I thought that our fans and season ticket holders were going to have to come to the east side, because that's where all the guys with money were.
Mercer Island.
Right. And so so that was one thing I changed. Okay. And you may or may not know this, and I'm just going to touch on it briefly. I made the contract when I changed channels. I asked Population, I had to okay the announcers. I don't know if you know that.
Oh, yeah. The club had the right to reject the announcers.
Right. And I rejected their first choice. I don't know if you know that.
No, I did not.
At all. The first guy they wanted to do, I said, no, he is unacceptable. I don't think he's professional enough to be the voice of this team. Because I want a certain kind of image to be created so that the people can feel good about our team.
I want to thank you. As a young sportscaster, you were always very kind to me. You took the time with me. And...
Well, that was a mistake.
Bill, don't make it so long between visits. It's only been about 20 years since we've done one of these. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you. Thank you.
A champion on the court, but more importantly, a champion in life. Bill Russell with us and you on America's Sports Talk Show.